Okay, let's unpack this. For anyone who follows the challenges of food relief, especially here in the U.S., the scale of need is, well, it's just immense. We tend to talk about hunger like it's one single problem, but when you look closer, it breaks down into hundreds of different logistical hurdles. Today, we're doing a deep dive into how a pretty niche industry group has teamed up with a very dedicated charity. And they're working to solve what might be the single hardest logistical puzzle that food banks are facing right now.
That's really the core of our mission today. We're looking at this collaboration between the American Hunting Lease Association, you'll hear us call it AHLA, and this incredibly effective organization, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry, or FHS.
FHFH.
And this isn't just, two organizations shaking hands for a photo op. It's a brilliant blueprint for how specialized communities can create a really sustainable, high-impact solution to a critical social need.
And for our sources, we have a brief, but honestly, a very informative statement from AHLA that details the scope of their partnership. And for you, the learner, this source material is kind of a shortcut to understanding the real mechanics of modern hunger relief, specifically why just throwing money at the problem isn't always the answer, and why logistics and, unique resources are often much more valuable.
And what's so fascinating here is the synergy. You got the AHLA, which is all about the business and risk management side of land use. And then you have FHFH, which represents the resource allocation side of hunting. So we're connecting this industrial network, I mean, people who own or lease huge tracts of land, with a critical ongoing food supply infrastructure. It's resource management meeting philanthropy, really.
So let's start by defining AHLA. When you look at what they actually do, their core services, they are hyper-specialized. They provide insurance products tailored specifically for the hunting and land management community. We're talking hunting lease insurance, vacant land insurance.
Guides and outfitters insurance, too.
Exactly. They are completely embedded in that specific economy.
They are. And their whole business model means that AHLA has these direct, trusted relationships with thousands of landowners, land managers, hunting clubs all across the country. These are the people on the ground managing wildlife resources and, facilitating the harvest. So when AHLA announces they're collaborating with a charity, they aren't just giving it a thumbs up. They're potentially plugging that charity into their entire professional network.
Okay, but how does an insurance provider,
Yeah.
how do they specifically help with meat donation? I get that they're providing liability coverage for the lease itself, but does that risk management structure somehow plug directly into the donation process?
That is a crucial question. It really is. Because it goes way beyond just a simple financial donation. See, when a hunter donates venison, it has to be processed safely, legally. This involves a whole cold chain professional butchers, who are often small business owners. And one of the biggest challenges for a nationwide donation program is managing all the risk and liability involved in handling, processing, and then distributing wild game to the public.
Oh, I see.
So AHLA's network, their expertise in managing liability for land use and related activities, it strongly suggests they bring vital infrastructure support. It might be through network access to professionals they already trust, or by helping FHFH navigate the regulatory maze and potential liability. It just gives stability to the whole system.
So AHLA is kind of the stabilizer. They're using the trust and the protocols that are already built into their professional world. And that brings us to the other partner, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. At their heart, what are they?
They're a venison donation ministry. It's that simple. Their focus is on redirecting the annual harvest. We're talking high-quality meat to people who are facing food insecurity.
And their identity is simple, but like you said, just profoundly effective.
Right. So the collaboration is aimed squarely at supporting FHFH's operational capacity, their ability to process and distribute that meat day in and day out. This kind of partnership gives FHFH a huge boost in credibility and instantly broadens its reach within that hunting community.
Okay, let's pause here because this next point, it really touches on a massive systemic failure in a lot of general charity drives that FHFH seems to have completely solved. We have to focus on the unique value they bring to the table. It isn't just food, it's a very, very specific kind of food.
It is. And the source material couldn't be clearer on this.
No.
FHFH provides what is identified as the number one most difficult item for food banks and feeding ministries to obtain:
Which is?
protein-based red meat. And that single insight right there tells you everything you need to know about where the traditional system breaks down.
It's a huge claim, but it makes perfect sense when you stop and think about it. We all know what general food drives collect. It's canned beans, it's pasta, maybe some tuna if you're lucky. But dense, high-quality protein, especially red meat, that's the unicorn of food bank donations. So why? Let's break down those hurdles, the cost, and the logistics.
Well, we can see three immediate pain points that FHFH just cuts right through. The first is pure cost, with a capital C. If you're a food bank trying to buy red meat commercially, like beef, it is prohibitively expensive in bulk. For a small community ministry on a tight budget, buying thousands of pounds of high-quality red meat it's just about impossible.
Right. If you have $1,000 to spend, you can buy so much more in terms of sheer calories with grains or pasta than you can with frozen ground meat, even if the meat is nutritionally way better.
Precisely. The second pain point is cold chain logistics and shelf life. Unlike canned goods, red meat is perishable. It needs strict temperature control. It has to be frozen from the processor all the way to the recipient. That drives up transportation costs, storage costs, and the risk of spoilage is always there. Your big grocery chains have that infrastructure, but your average local food bank, rarely.
So a 100-donated system that uses local butchers, it sort of bypasses that massive, expensive commercial supply chain.
It does. It relies on a decentralized, community-based model. And that brings us to the third point, nutritional density. I mean, any protein is good, but the micronutrient profile in red meat, we're talking iron, zinc, B vitamins, is so vital, especially for growing kids or people dealing with illness.
A diet of just canned tuna or beans, while helpful, can leave a real nutritional gap.
And high-quality red meat fills that gap incredibly efficiently. So when you understand this, you see that FHFH isn't just another food charity. They are a specialized supply line designed to deliver the most needed and least available resource.
They're leveraging an existing renewable resource wild game that would otherwise just be consumed by the hunter, and they're rerouting it into the relief network. It's a perfect fit of supply and demand.
It really is.
But here's the one point of friction I keep thinking about. Relying on an annual harvest that seems inherently variable. You know, you can predict how many cans of beans a factory will produce, but deer populations fluctuate. Hunter success rates change from year to year. How does FHFH manage that variability to stay sustainable?
That's where you can really see the operational maturity of FHFH, because yes, the harvest is variable, but they mitigate that by having a national scope. They've standardized the donation system. They partner with local trusted processors everywhere. And the support from a group like AHLA likely helps them standardize that whole logistical playbook.
So it's reliable no matter which chapter you're working with.
Right. And besides, the sheer volume of donations, even with that seasonal change, is still significant enough to make a massive, massive dent.
And the proof of that sustainability is, well, it's overwhelming. This is not some small pilot project. Since it was founded back in 1997, FHFH has provided more than 20.2 million servings of meat for people struggling with hunger in the U.S.
That single data point is monumental.
20.2 million.
It just demonstrates decades of consistent, scalable, and effective logistical management. To get to 20 million servings, you need a system that just works. In every state, through every hunting season, managing hundreds of different processing partners, it's basically operational excellence disguised as simple charity.
It absolutely proves the model is robust.
Yeah.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, let's talk about how they manage that scale. The source says FHFH is the only venison donation ministry actively setting up chapters across the nation. What does that mean to set up a chapter in this kind of decentralized, hyper-local model?
Setting up chapters is the key to standardization. Think about how complex it is. Hunting seasons, wildlife regulations, even health department rules for processing meat. They vary wildly from state to state.
Oh, of course.
So a national chapter model means FHFH has standardized the process. The paperwork, the liability waivers, the relationships with processors. So a hunter in Montana is basically following the same logistical steps as a hunter in Maryland.
So they're providing the blueprint, the institutional support that's needed when you're dealing with a regulated perishable product.
They are. They're selling the solution, not just collecting the meat. They're maximizing their impact by making that local processor network as efficient as possible.
And their approach is collaborative. That's a key point.
It is. The source notes that they actively try to collaborate with other existing state and local venison donation programs. And that's a subtle but really powerful insight into their whole philosophy.
Collaboration, not competition.
Exactly. They don't want to come in and replace a successful local group. They want to integrate with them, offer them the national infrastructure, the risk management support, the standardized procedures that maybe a smaller state-based charity just doesn't have.
So they're almost like a national integrator for venison donation, bringing best practices and, you know, economies of scale to what could be a very fractured system.
That's a great way to put it. And that collaborative model makes them a perfect, reliable partner for an organization like AHLA. AHLA isn't partnering with some fly-by-night operation. They're connecting their massive network to a highly organized, professionally managed group that values efficiency and standards.
Now let's talk about the audience FHFH reaches, because there's this beautiful duality to it. They're bridging two different worlds.
They really are. On one side, the donor side, they deeply engage the hunting and landowning community. They give them a clear, tangible way to contribute socially.
Right.
Then on the other side, the recipient side, they engage the broader non-hunting communities who are receiving this incredible protein through their local food banks, churches, and other feeding ministries.
And when you analyze the benefit of that duality, it just shows how unique this solution really is. It completely reframes the act of hunting, which for many is a very insulated activity, and makes it an immediate, essential part of the food relief infrastructure. It's a perfect example of leveraging one community's output for a broad social good.
And it creates a powerful, positive feedback loop within the hunting community itself. I mean, when a hunter knows that their ethical and regulated harvest can directly translate into high-quality meals for struggling families in their own area,
it adds a whole other layer of purpose to it.
It does. It transforms a personal endeavor into a community service.
So what does this all mean when we bring it back to the partnership? You combine the land management infrastructure and professional network of the AHLA with the scalable, focused, operational model of FHFH. And you get a targeted solution that provides massive, tangible results. That 20.2 million servings number isn't just a statistic. It's proof that they solved the hardest part of the equation.
They solved how to get red meat onto the tables of people who need it the most. It's a perfect synthesis. You've got specific industry expertise meeting a focused, charitable need. This AHLA-FHFH partnership is really a model for how supporting the infrastructure, things like insurance, land networks, professionalism, can enable a highly focused charity to tackle a problem that seems almost impossible.
The problem of protein scarcity.
Exactly, that pervasive problem in our food relief system.
And that focus is precisely why the impact is so deep. We really have to celebrate FHFH for those 20.2 million servings they've delivered since 1997. It's an outcome that would be incredibly difficult for even major national grocery chains to sustain just through donation.
It's truly a remarkable demonstration of community resources filling a massive logistical gap.
And I think this deep dive really reveals the surprising power of leveraging these highly specific, often overlooked resources, you know, like the annual venison harvest from the hunting community, using that to meet the most critical, complex needs in hunger relief.
And this specific case study, it raises an important question for you, the listener, to think about long after we're done here.
The venison solution solved the protein gap. So consider how many other specialized niche industries or communities might hold the key to solving other persistent, difficult logistical challenges in social aid. Not necessarily with money, which is often, you know, interchangeable, but with what they already naturally produce or process or handle within their own unique ecosystem. What specialized resource could solve the next major hurdle in food distribution or elderly care or even educational access? That's the real insight here.